Kia ora. In today's Herb Talk podcast, Phil and I are discussing another huge topic, adaptogens. We will be covering the main uses and actions for the main adaptogenic herbs and the top favourites for in-clinic use. So please join us today to learn more about these wonderful herbs that most of us are using every day, or if not weekly, for in-clinic. Welcome back, Phil. Lovely to have you back with us today again for today's podcast.
Thanks, Charlene.
Thank you. And thanks to all our listeners out there and joining us today for the huge subject again, but on adaptogenics this time, and one that I'm sure that will be most relevant to a lot of us and other practitioners out there who are starting or who are very experienced in clinic. It's one that sort of never leaves us as we go through various treating various conditions and helping for client outcomes. Well, Phil, one of the questions that we've got today for you, and it's our first one of today, is one that we've probably covered at different stages on different topics as adaptogens seem to be that kind of herb that come into lots of different herbal uses. But what are some of your top fave adaptogenic herbs for in-clinic? I've got one clear in my mind, which I know absolutely is, but I'm sure you can enlighten us with Anya American Ginseng. We're right there.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, adaptogens are basically harmless or safe agents, generally medicinal plants that help protect organisms against stress, against the negative effects of stress or stressors. So that can be physical, chemical, or mental stress. Or, you know, psychological stress. So they're pharmacologically active and they basically work through multiple mechanisms of action. The term was first coined by some Soviets in the former Soviet Union in 1940 initially, and then 1964, you know, by Brekhin basically. But yeah, there are many, many adaptogens. And in fact, you know, we often think of, as we just said, Withania, ginseng, American ginseng, those types of plants as being, you know, our key adaptogens. But when you actually delve deep into that definition and consider all the types of medicinal plants we use, probably a large percentage of them are, strictly speaking, adaptogenic. They help protect humans and animals against all sorts of adverse environmental or lifestyle factors, or even genetic factors, you know, the expression of those. But, yeah, we all have our favourites, and you did right. Withania is probably my favourite adaptogen, ashwagandha, and as we all knew, us experienced herbalists, you know, 20 years ago when we started using this plant quite regularly and using it on ourselves, we soon realised, wow, this is a pretty amazing plant. And obviously something that's been used for centuries in you know, large parts of Asia to help with a whole diverse range of you know, medical conditions and lifestyle unavoidable factors to help protect against them is definitely a very powerful adaptogen. So Withania somnifera, it is an adaptogen for the modern world we live in. And, you know, ashwagandha, you know, just this morning on my computer, I'm looking at something and there comes, pops up, thanks to the bot, a little video on ashwagandha, how amazing this new herb is. So I don't know, you feel a bit cynical and sceptical sometimes. It takes the world a long time to cotton on to, you know, stuff that we were advocating 20, 30 years ago. But anyway, Withania is really, really good, you know, for all sorts of reasons. It's good for people who are overwired, you know, where there's too much adrenaline going on, where their life is too fast and hard, which is most of us, I think, because it's gently anxiolytic. It is energy invoking, but also at the same time keeps you kind of better focused on the big stuff so that the small stuff is more manageable. So that's a good adaptogen. But yeah, Panax ginseng is, of course, the archetypal original adaptogen. And there are other Panax species as well. American ginseng, Panax cinquefolium, is one of my favourites. It's got its own indications and specificities, as has Panax nota ginseng or Tianqi ginseng. So they're all really good at protecting against different things, as are Schizandra, Bicol skullcap, Bupleurum, that's another one of my favourites, particularly for lung conditions. Lion's mane I'm using a lot more these days, learning as I go from using it, and possibly Kawakara as well. I use a lot of that, and I think that probably has adaptogenic properties. So that's just some of my favourites, to be honest.
That gives us a lovely wee insight, Phil. I think, like you, a lot of people have gotten into use lion's mane more. We see that in the dispensary, and we see that just through queries and people's wanting to order it or just know more about it. So you're right, lion's mane is one that we should all embrace probably a little bit more. It's got some pretty special and unique properties.
Yep, definitely.
Going on there.
Yep.
And not just an adaptogen, is it? I mean, you've got neuroprotection and all that follows behind it, mood. It's pretty incredible, actually. And it's got some promising studies, right? It's got some research that seems to
absolutely
be emerging as we go along more and more.
Yep.
I know this is a very single-minded question, but just one to give us a bit of an idea for those that may not be familiar or they've started just their path in clinic or just people that want to genuinely know a little bit more. What key constituents do you see in adaptogenic herbs? We know it's not all about the key constituents as such, but we do know that that has a great relevance as well in regards to their ability. So what and how do these main constituents contribute to their properties? And obviously we know that adaptogenic herbs are used a lot for adrenal conditions or commonly known for adrenal conditions or burnout conditions and fast, busy, paced lives. But in your words, what key constituents do you see typically in an adaptogenic herb profile?
Yeah, I think, as I said earlier, there are so many different types of adaptogenic plants and they're extremely diverse that there isn't any single common theme in terms of that type of secondary metabolite features in all of them. But, you know, the original adaptogens by definition and the earliest ones that were of greatest interest and probably still are now, the ginsengs, the ginsenosides that are key actors, they're not the only actors, there's some interesting polysaccharides that modulate the gut microbiome, for instance. But the ginsenosides are saponin compounds. They're a type of saponin. There's different types, there's different subtypes of saponin depending on whether it's American ginseng or Korean ginseng, Asian ginseng. And with other adaptogens, you do also sometimes see saponins like bupleurim, which, as I said, is one of my favourites. The Seiko saponins and bupleurim, there's a lot of research on them now, and we know that they're very important in the tonifying and disease-protective activities of bupleurim against, you know, cancer and against lung pathologies. So, but then thirdly, I guess you get terpenoids, triterpenes and other, you know, diterpenes, triterpenes. You find them in a lot of bitter tasting plants and a lot of highly medicinal plants, many of which are also adaptogenic. So maybe that's another common theme. You also see things like amides, you know, like piperine and alcohol amides and things like kawakawa and black pepper. And black pepper, if you use it in a certain way, it can also be adaptogenic, as traditionally I think kawakawa is in a modern day setting. So, there are some common themes, but I think, you know, saponins do feature quite prominently, as do, you know, terpenoids and maybe some of those amides.
Great. That's really interesting. I think you're absolutely so accurate in the way you describe that adaptogens don't typically have one response. Well, they are such a varied bunch, aren't they?
Adaptogenic
herbs.
And the medicinal fungi as well, which many of which are also adaptogenic, you know, lion's mane that you mentioned earlier and others. The polysaccharides in them are clearly quite important in many ways because they do modulate the gut microbiome.
Yes.
But the terpenoids also feature in all of those medicinal fungi. And a lot of them are very good adaptogenic. So, you know, there could well be intrinsic adaptogenic properties with the terpenes. But as you said, it's the summation of the whole, isn't it? It's all of those phytochemicals working as a team that is the power of our medicinal plants.
Of course, it's not isolating one single constituent out here, but it's interesting to see the relationships, isn't it, as we look at them very broadly.
Yep.
Can we use them for other purposes? Yes, the short answer, yes, but just your opinion here, Phil. People use them commonly for, you know, poor immune function. Stress is often in there too, adrenal function. But what else can they help us with? What, in your opinion, what else have you seen?
I think the short answer is most conditions, really. You know, we sometimes, I think, dumb down adaptogens by saying that they're adrenal tonics, as if that's all they do. Yeah, I mean, for all intents and purposes, every clinician does that sometimes, you know, for a simplicity's sake, to express something, particularly in a patient communication context. But as practitioners, we should acknowledge that the research on all of these medicinal plants is increasing exponentially all the time, and as well as protecting against fatigue, which is, I guess, the key outcome of the, you know, the key objective of adaptogens in the early days. Now we're protecting against cancer with some of these things, and that's borne out by increasingly a large number of animal studies. You know, we know that things like cordyceps, that Panax, notoginseng, Panax, quinquefolium, Panax, ginseng, Scutellaria bicalensis, bicale skullcap, and possibly Piperix alsum or kawakawa, these things do have protective effects against cancer, different types of cancer in vitro and, as I say, increasingly in animal studies. So that's a very powerful action in the modern world that we live in. It's not just protecting against exhaustion and stress, it's actually protecting against lifestyle or genetic factors that can lead to cancer. So that's very compelling. And as you said earlier, Charlene, neuroprotective effects of lion's mane, you know, a lot of pretty well all adaptogens, the more we look and the more we research, we're finding that they are neuroprotective as well. So for neurological conditions, particularly against Parkinson's or dementia and Alzheimer's, again, we're seeing increasing amounts of work being done in those areas. And thirdly, you know, the gut microbiome, they do modulate it, and that indirectly can lead to a whole lot of other benefits in chronic conditions especially, particularly around diabetes, obesity, mood conditions, et cetera. They can do a whole lot of other things apart from just working specifically on the adrenals. They do work on multiple levels, and they're really powerful things.
Yeah, I completely agree. Phil, I think we all probably completely agree, I guess, with that statement, that we tend to keep them for stress mainly, but you're right, they are more than that. I mean, their name gives away exactly that, doesn't it? They help us, adapt.
Yep, and they're protective.
That's right, yeah, help us grow resilience and be stronger in lots of different ways, not just in surviving stress situations.
Absolutely.
Which is good news.
Of course it is.
There might be prophylactic uses yet, but of course we know that there is, don't we? Withania is a classic example. Even the ginsengs, aren't they, of their immune effects, and plus their adaptogenic effects, plus, you know, helping with the stress response all in one go.
Absolutely. And, you know, in fact, there's probably quite a good case to make to put ashwagandha or withania in the drinking water, you know, because it is that protection that these adaptogens invoke that really can help avoid the need to take drugs, go to hospital, tie up waiting lists for busy doctors. And I think the evidence of their prophylactic effects against a whole range of different chronic illnesses is really quite compelling. And it's really diverse, and it's really plant species specific, a lot of it. You know, there are some commonalities, their protective effects against stressors, but those stressors are so diverse these days. You know, we need to learn more about specificities in terms of which is the best indicated herb for this problem or that problem, for instance. So there's no shortage of prophylactic capabilities with our adaptogens.
I love that particular reference, Phil, in the drinking water. That's a very interesting concept and one that could be queried by
I think it's worth,
by many,
worth
but
thinking
I think it's definitely worth thinking about. We have other substances in the drinking water which may or may are questionable as to the benefits of those. So why wouldn't we possibly think of something else that
I mean, in fact, we could suggest it to the powers that be the next time there's a so-called extreme weather event, that it's on hand, ready to put into the drinking water for whether it's Aucklanders or people from Hawke's Bay or wherever. for the ensuing month and do a pilot clinical trial on it. Why not?
It may produce a desirable effect of very calm and
because it's very safe. Resilient people. It is very safe. You know, we you know have to stand up and say that Withania is very safe. There's no reason why pretty well everyone shouldn't take it.
Yeah, and you're right, Phil. That's a lovely endpoint to make. We need to stand up for the herbs that we know are safe and that have a lot of clinical research on, and that they deserve to be utilised more, don't they? They don't deserve to be locked away in a cupboard by any means. They deserve to have some limelight.
Yep, and prevention is better than needing to go for a cure.
Of course, always. And always easier too, right, for the result, for the person.
Definitely.
It's always an easier path to get it right at the start. Just as we talk about adaptogens and all their possible uses, what are some of the main presenting symptoms you see in clients that benefit from adaptogen use? I guess we can all relate to this, but it's just lovely to hear it in words and when you've put them in, whether it's a classical client sort of picture or whether it's someone that you completely unexpected.
Fatigue is definitely the first one, and burnout. You know, people come to you and almost as soon as they walk in the door or they talk to you on the phone or they email you, your first contact with patients often gives you a bit of an indication as to what's going on. And it is often burnout and fatigue. So suddenly, you know, you start thinking with Withania and other adaptogens from day one. But, you know, sometimes people come to you with a mood condition, with depression or, you know, feeling glum or it might be insomnia. Those three types of complaints are really common to people who will benefit from adaptogens. But again, everyone's different, you know. It might be somebody who comes to you with an itchy eczema and otherwise everything seems hunky-dory in their life and they're eating well and, you know, their job's going well, their relationship, they're sleeping well. But, you know, there's clearly something a little bit out of balance. And so you might, you know, consider adaptogens like Bicale Skullcap or, you know, other types of herbs that are good for that particular presentation. So, again, you know, there's a whole range and you can't really simplify it, I'm afraid.
No, there's no easy what to do there. But that gives us some ideas, and hopefully for the people listening out there, I'm sure everyone had an idea of where adaptogens fit in those classical pictures or symptoms, but you're right, it's always individual. So it could be in completely expected cases, very typical cases and very atypical cases, right?
Yep.
Another question that can run into that question, and this is a very general question, but one that I think will be interesting for a lot of our listeners here today in clinic, is how can they be used safely for long-term use? Yes, we know Withania is, but just this is a very generalised question, but we often do get asked it, can they be used safely for long-term use? So that's just thinking of all our main adaptogens that you named, the blue plurin down to the ginsengs. Generally, it is a very broad question, but generally, safety for adaptogens?
Yeah, I think the short answer is yes, they can. Traditionally, in certain cultures, particularly traditional Chinese medicine, it's sometimes said that adaptogens shouldn't be taken long-term unless it's an older or elderly person. But in a young person, the concept sometimes is that by insulating against change or stressors and invoking the adaptability of the body to those things, you might be, during an acute infection, for instance, you might be enabling the bug to colonise the body easier. You might be assisting that unwillingly as opposed to assisting the body to resist that bug. So during acute infections, particularly where there's a really serious fever or it's really quite acute, possibly certain adaptogens shouldn't be used, particularly the ginsengs and maybe, you know, Bicale, well, it may be bupleurin, but Bicale Skullcap and Panax Quinquefolium and many of the others, you know, cordyceps can be actually very useful during acute infections. So, but yeah, long term, in fact, you do need to take some of these adaptogens long term before you get results. So I think, you know, that traditional view is largely being overturned. And it's generally very safe to take them. I mean, some people say that you shouldn't take ginseng long term if you're a young person, but if you're going to go like a bat out of hell and have a very busy lifestyle and live in an environment that's like London or whatever, where there's no hardly anything green growing around you, you do need to insulate you against those environmental stressors. And why wouldn't you take an adaptogen? So I think long-term use is generally what people need, actually. But adaptogens shouldn't be the sole intervention where people's lifestyle also needs to change. And again, as holistic integrated practitioners, we need to provide appropriate advice and often refer people on as well where they need to make lifestyle changes and maybe need some additional assistance to do so.
Thanks, Phil. That's a really important point. Knowing when to refer on is just as important as any treatment plan, isn't it? When yep. there needs to be shared care or a referral because you can no longer benefit that person as best, or, you know, a shared care would be more beneficial for that person, then that's always good to know when that point arises for the client. For best optimal client care, of course, and that's what it should all be about at the end of the day.
Yep.
Are there any known contraindications? This one's runs into this question a bit, but between certain medication and the ginseng family, if we can't look at every herb today within just this episode, but because you're very familiar with the ginseng family and use it a lot, are there any certain medications that you've come up with where people have been on and there's been a contraindication or a caution that you would need to be careful about?
Not in the sort of doses that I use for any of the three ginseng species is my initial answer. If somebody wasn't sleeping very well and they were taking sleeping tablets, which isn't a long-term healthy option, it's not the first choice option, I wouldn't give large doses of Panax ginseng to people like that. I'd certainly consider Withania instead. But, you know, apart from that scenario, I can't think of any other contraindication. Possibly pregnancy, you know, you need to be a bit careful, you know, You don't take any medication, herbal or drug, unless it's strongly indicated. So, you know, particularly in the first trimester. But aside from those situations, no, I don't think there's any real contraindication.
That's great news. That opens the door for a lot of people, you know, that are on a lot of medications. I know that there are those clients, of course, as you would know, where there is just extensive list of.
Yeah, I think we need to be a bit braver sometimes with this area too, in fact, because, you know, Tianqi ginseng or Panax nota ginseng, there are parenteral forms of it, injectable forms that are used quite widespread now in hospitals in China for people post-stroke, you know, or people where circulatory deficits or cardiovascular diseases, basically. And they're given in association, well, they're given as alternatives to aspirin and sometimes other anticoagulant drugs, not just antiplatelet drugs. And yes, they can cause adverse events like all parenteral preparations can, like all medicines can, but the benefits generally seem to outweigh the risks of using that herb in that way. So when you think about it, that's quite a serious condition and quite a serious dose of a plant to give, but with good outcomes. So, we need to, I think, just be a little bit bolder in this area sometimes, albeit cautiously. You know, start with a low dose if you're not sure and then work up.
Yeah, that's great advice. The low dose is always a good way to start for those practitioners out there or people that are a little bit hesitant about using something or they have a very complicated case. That's great advice to start there as a starting point and then you can always move up, right?
That's definitely,
That's the great thing about that starting point. And you're right, absolutely right. Traditional herbs being used more and more or being in the forefront will help us be bolder as well. The more research that comes out, the more use that they have helps other people entice them to use for client care, right, and for recovery.
Definitely.
So hopefully this is a space to watch as we see more integrated care, hopefully globally, not just in New Zealand, come forward a bit more. We kind of feels like we're overdue for that movement by a long way.
Definitely. And it's going to happen.
Yeah, slowly, but we need it to happen a bit more so, don't we?
Absolutely.
It's time, definitely. Just as we end on all those wonderful questions for everyone who's listening today to the most relevant topic we have today of adaptogens, and I'm sure all of our listeners out there work with them so much and already are very experienced and know themselves how to use them, and this is just added into, you know, their toolbox of use. Just a case study from you. just a pick from you from In Clinic Use for any adaptogenic care that stands out for you to share with us?
I mean, I think like most practitioners, I could talk about several cases every day that I'm in clinic where I use an adaptogen and I think it's really helping the patient. But somebody I saw recently was a 53-year-old menopausal woman. She hadn't been sleeping very well. She was postmenopausal but still, you know, experiencing some perimenopausal type symptoms and getting flushes and a little bit of bleeding now and then. And pretty stressed, you know, the lack of sleep wasn't helping. She'd been prescribed Zopiclone and had it a few times for sleep, but, you know, really didn't want to keep taking it. And her friend, who was a nurse, was strongly recommending HRT, but she didn't want to go down that route. So, you know, a perfect stressed out, reasonably typical patient in many ways. I'm sure a lot of you will have had similar people come and see you. So I gave her Withania, Phytomeds 3 and 2 Withania, standardised for withanolides, and 35% of that. Lion's mane, which is, I think, quite good where there's a tendency to overindulge or overeat, and maybe, you know, the mood's a little bit labile and the gut microbiome needs a little bit of a nudge. So I think that was 30-35% as well, because you do need to use a reasonable dose of that in my experience. And a little bit of sumisifugal Actea, black cohosh, I think about 10%. And then I think it was 25% of lemon balm, just to help her relax a little bit. And a separate sleep mix, the main mix was 10 mils twice a day initially. I thought she needed that, not 8. And the sleeping mix contained passion flower and kava, and a little bit of licorice, 10% licorice for flavour. So that combination, those two formulas certainly seemed to help her, and she's still on them now. And I think, you know, and she's not taking the Zopiclone anymore, and it's fairly early days, but she's resisting the recommendation to go on HRT. So, but already, you know, her stress, you can see it lifted off her with the second visit. It's really encouraging. And that's not an atypical story, I'm sure. Everyone can tell similar stories about our wonderful adaptogens.
Thanks, Phil. I'm sure everyone can, but it's great to hear from you today. A case study like that, if everyone listening today, I think it's even makes it even more special that everyone would relate to that story, I'm sure, and realise just, although it sounds simple, getting a result like that is amazing. We want for every client, wouldn't it, ultimately?
Absolutely.
Thanks for being part of today's discussion and our Herb Talk podcast, Phil, and the big but oh so relevant topic of adaptogens.
Thanks, Charlene. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Ka kite anō.
Ka kite.